Let's get started on another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired scripture. We are in Jeremiah chapter 41, a little bit of material that we hit last week as we are closing up, but I want to get the context back for us again. And this is all happening within just a couple of months after the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians in accordance with Jeremiah's prophecies for the last 40 years. Jeremiah is with Gedaliah, who is the Babylonian-appointed Jewish governor of the area of Judea, the people who were left to work the land. And he has been warned that there is one particular guy that has come back into his presence that's out to kill him. In fact, the guy who informed him about it said, if you'll just let me do it, I'll take him out first. But Gedaliah did not believe it. And unfortunately, that disbelief, that failure to heed the warning of someone else, costs him his life. So Jeremiah chapter 41, verse 1. In the seventh month, that's of the Jewish year, and so we're talking about October of 587 BC. In the seventh month, Ishmael, the son of Netaniah, son of Elishama, of the royal family, one of the chief officers of the king, came with 10 men to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, at Mizpah. So this is the guy that Gedaliah was warned about. And so now he's letting him have a meal with him during the seventh month, the month of the bringing in of the tithe and the wrap-up of the harvest and the preparation for the new agricultural year. And so they're at Mizpah, which is the headquarters of Gedaliah, and they ate bread together. Verse 2, Ishmael, the son of Netaniah, and of the 10 men with him, rose up and struck down Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, son of Shaphan, with the sword, and killed him whom the king of Babylon had appointed governor in the land, exactly as he was warned. He's now dead because he didn't heed the warnings. Verse 3, Ishmael also struck down all the Judeans who were with Gedaliah at Mizpah and the Chaldean soldiers who happened to be there. So he's done in all of the Babylonian-appointed Judean leadership. And he's also killed some of the military force of the Babylonians that were left there to protect these representatives of the Babylonian government. So this guy he's attempting a coup, it would seem. Verse number 4, on the day after the murder of Gedaliah, before anyone knew of it, 80 men arrived from Shechem and Shiloh and Samaria with their beards shaved and their clothes torn and their bodies gashed, bringing grain offerings and incense to present at the temple of He Who Is. Now, the temple does not exist anymore. There's only ruins there. These guys are coming from what was once the northern kingdom of Israel. These are apparently people who had been living in the northern region during the latter years of the Judean kingdom, and they had been coming down to Judea to worship at the temple. So these were apparently some, at least somewhat compliant and religious personages from the northern kingdom area. But now they're coming in a grieful state to offer their sacrifices at the site of the ruined temple. And that's when this happens. Verse 6, Ishmael, the son of Netaniah, came out from Mizpah to meet them, weeping as he came. Now, he's putting on a show. This is not genuine sorrow. As he met them, he said to them, come in to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, And when they came into the city, Ishmael, the son of Netaniah, and the men who were with him slaughtered them and cast them into a cistern. So they are murdered on the spot and thrown into this man-made water tank. But there were 10 men among them who said to Ishmael, "Don't put us to death. We have stores of wheat, barley, oil, and honey hidden in the fields." So these guys try to barter for their lives by saying that they'd set aside some supplies in a secret location, and if they were killed, they'd never be able to find them. So he refrained and did not put them to death with their companions. So they were able to barter their way out of death. Now the cistern into which Ishmael had thrown all the bodies of the men whom he'd struck down along with Gedaliah was the large cistern that King Asa had made for defense against Baasha, king of Israel. Ishmael, the son of Netaniah, filled it with the slain. Little historical note here that goes almost all the way back to the split between the southern kingdom of Judah and the northern kingdom of Israel. They had border skirmishes in those first few generations after the split. And King Asa reinforced his side of the border, which included making supply depots, places for resources, and he apparently built this cistern at that time. So what was intended to secure the border ends up being used as a mass grave for an atrocity. Verse 10. Then Ishmael took captive all the rest of the people who were in Mizpah, the king's daughters and all the people who were left at Mizpah, whom Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had committed to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam. So now Ishmael decides it's time to get out of here because he has certainly set himself up as someone to be tracked down by the Babylonian authorities for his massacre, for his atrocities. So he grabs as hostages some of the king's daughters. Apparently when King Zedekiah was taken away to Babylon, some of his daughters were left in the land for whatever reason. Maybe they were little daughters. But these are now grabbed as hostages for Ishmael. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that he was planning on marrying one of them as a claim to the Israeli throne or to the Judean throne. But at this point, he can't stick around. He's going to go back, or that's his plan, to Ammon, across the Jordan River to the east, to the kingdom of Ammon, and there make his alliances strong so that perhaps later he can come back and claim the throne for himself. Ishmael, the son of Netaniah, took them captive and set out to cross over to the Ammonites. And when Gedaliah was warned about the assassination, you might remember that he was told that this was a plot backed by the Ammonite king. So that seems to confirm that that accusation was correct. Now, the guy who warned Gedaliah was named Yohanan, the son of Kareah. And he comes back into our story in verse number 11. When Jonathan, the son of Kareah, and all the leaders of the forces with him heard of all the evil that Ishmael, the son of Netaniah, had done, they took all their men and went to fight against Ishmael, the son of Netaniah. They came upon him at the great pool that is in Gibeon. Now, Gibeon was the place where the tabernacle was located in the later years of Samuel and the beginning years of King Saul. And it's not very far from Mizpah. And there, we know there was a great big pool there. It's mentioned in another story where when the civil war was raging between King David and Ishbaal, some of their forces fought at this pool near the tabernacle at Gibeon. And so that is where Ishmael is caught up to by Yohanan. Verse number 13, when all the people who were with Ishmael saw Yohanan, the son of Gareah, and all the leaders of the forces with him, they rejoiced. So they were excited because they could see that this was a rescue coming their direction. So all the people whom Ishmael had carried away captive from Mizpah turned around, and they came back and went to Yohanan, the son of Gareah. But Ishmael, the son of Netaniah, escaped from Jonathan, or Yohanan, with eight men and went to the Ammonites. So Ishmael apparently did not think he had enough military forces to resist Yohanan and his people. So he lets go of his hostages, and he and his men light out for Ammon, heading east toward the Jordan Valley as fast as they can go. Verse 16, then Yohanan, the son of Kareah, and all the leaders of the forces with him, took from Mizpah all the rest of the people whom he had recovered from Ishmael, the son of Netaniah, after he had struck down Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam. Soldiers, women, children, eunuchs, whom Yohanan brought back from Gibeon. So we have now rescued quite a few people and have brought them back, and now a plan needs to come up with. And it's a panic plan, because Yohanan assumes that the Babylonians are going to punish all Jews for the assassination of Gedaliah and his Judean associates and his Babylonian security force. Verse 17, so they went and stayed at Gerut Kimham near Bethlehem, intending to go to Egypt because of the Chaldeans, for they were afraid of them, because Ishmael, the son of Netaniah, had struck down Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, whom the king of Babylon had made governor over the land. So Yohanan and his guys assume the Babylonians will be back, and they will kill anyone, especially former Judean military personnel. They will kill anyone that they suspect had a hand in the assassination of their governor and the killing of their own military. So these guys leave Mizpah and Gibeon. They travel past Jerusalem to the south and get as far as a location near Bethlehem, which is about 4 or so miles south of Jerusalem. And this is on the road that leads out of Judea, off to the southwest, and then down the coast past Gaza, and eventually to the borders of Egypt. And Babylon and Egypt are not on good terms right now, so Yohanan figures that he would be safe if he flees to Egypt. Chapter 42. Then all the commanders of the forces, and Yohanan, the son of Kareah, and Yahzaniah, the son of Hoshaniah, and all the people from the least to the greatest came near and said to Jeremiah the prophet. Now, we'd almost forgotten about him. He was right smack in the middle of all this. He was probably there when Gedaliah was assassinated. He was then among the hostages that Ishmael was taking away to Ammon. And then he was among the hostages that were rescued by Yohanan. And now he's among those that are being taken to Egypt to supposedly be protected against any Babylonian reprisals. So now everybody comes to the famous prophet of the past 40 years, the man who predicted with precision exactly what happened with the destruction of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple. And they said to him, "Let our plea for mercy come before you. Pray to He who is your God for us, for all this remnant, because we are left with but a few, as your eyes see us, that He who is your God may show us the way we should go and the thing we should do." So they come and make a request. "Please talk to God on our behalf and find out what we need to do next to be safe, because there's only a few of us left." This is not the complete total of agricultural workers that had been left in the land, but is a pretty good representative sample of the remnant left in the land. And so they are very concerned about their future. So verse 4, Jeremiah the prophet said to them, "I've heard you. Behold, I will pray to He who is your God according to your request, and whatever He who is answers you, I will tell you. I will keep nothing back from you." Now, Jeremiah is at least in his 60s, I would guess, by now. And so he is devoted to doing the will of God. And that includes passing on God's messages to the people. And so that's exactly what he's promised to do. Verse 5, "Then they said to Jeremiah, 'May He who is be a true and faithful witness against us if we do not act according to all the word with which He who is your God sends you to us. Whether it is good or bad, we will obey the voice of He who is our God to whom we are sending you, that it may be well with us when we obey the voice of He who is our God.'" Now we read those words, and those are great words. Those are words of commitment. Those are words of submission. But they are words that are not true. These guys will not keep their promise that they are making to Jeremiah right now, because they are twisted in their hearts, as so many of the Judeans were during this time period. They only want to go through the motions of religiosity, provided they get to do what they want to do anyway. They just want God to rubber stamp, and specifically, they want Jeremiah to rubber stamp what they've already planned to do, which is go to Egypt. These words are just fluff. Verse number 7. "At the end of 10 days," now I do not know why Jeremiah waited 10 days in order to give them an answer, unless, of course, and this is just something to throw out there for us to chew on, we know that these events are happening in the 7th month of the Jewish year. If the assassination took place on the first day of the 7th month, that would mean 10 days after these events would be the 10th day of the 7th month, which is the day of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, the day on which Jewish people fast and consider that the only way their sins can be removed is God's way. And so I wonder whether or not God made them all wait until it was Yom Kippur. Now, Jeremiah summoned Yohanan, the son of Kareah, all the commanders of the forces who were with him, and all the people from the least to the greatest. So now he's got everybody back together again. He said to them, "Thus says He who is the God of Israel, to whom you sent me to present your plea for mercy before Him. If you will remain in this land, then I will build you up and not pull you down. I will plant you and not pluck you up, for I relent of the disaster that I did to you. So this is God speaking here. Jeremiah is just speaking the direct words of God. So if you guys will just stay in the promised land, stay where the Babylonians put you. Verse number 11, do not fear the king of Babylon of whom you are afraid. Do not fear him, declares he who is, for I am with you to save you and to deliver you from his hand. So they're all worried that there will be reprisals from the Babylonian government. But God's response is, there will not be. I will save you from that. I will protect you. Remain in the land and you will be fine. Verse number 12, I will grant you mercy, that he may have mercy on you and let you remain in your own land. But, here comes the caveat. But if you say, we will not remain in this land, disobeying the voice of he who is your God and saying, no, we will go to the land of Egypt where we shall not see war or hear the sound of the trumpet or be hungry for bread, and we will dwell there. So if you insist on continuing to Egypt, as is your plan right this moment, then all you have to look at is God's judgment. Verse 15, then hear the word of he who is, O remnant of Judah. Thus says he who is of the hosts, of the armies, the God of Israel. If you set your faces to enter Egypt and go to live there, then the sword that you fear shall overtake you there in the land of Egypt. And the famine of which you are afraid shall follow close after you to Egypt, and you shall die. So if you blow God's message off of staying in the land and being submissive to the Babylonian king, a message, by the way, which Jeremiah had been preaching for years, if you blow all that off, you're going to die in Egypt. All the men who set their faces to go to Egypt to live there shall die by the sword, by famine, and by pestilence. That's the threefold judgment of God in the taking of Judea by the Babylonians. Some will die by direct military action. Some will die because they are starving because of the lack of supplies. And others will die from the diseases that come during times of famine and war. Continuing, they shall have no remnant or survivor from the disaster that I will bring upon them. So they will be terminated. Their families will end if they persist in going to Egypt. Verse 18, for thus says he who is of the hosts, the God of Israel, as my anger and my wrath were poured out on the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so my wrath will be poured out on you when you go to Egypt. You shall be an execration, that's a curse, a horror, a curse, and a taunt. You shall see this place no more. So this is your last chance to stay in the land and see good. If you go to Egypt, you will not be back. You will be dead. He who is has said to you, O remnant of Judah, do not go to Egypt. That's pretty plain, right? Know for a certainty that I've warned you this day that you have gone astray at the cost of your lives. For you sent me to he who is your God, saying, pray for us to he who is our God. Whatever he who is our God says, declare to us, and we will do it. And I have this day declared it to you, but you have not obeyed the voice of he who is your God in anything that he sent me to tell you. Now, Jeremiah is thinking back in the past now. He's been at this 40 years. Now, therefore, know for certainty that you shall die by the sword, by famine, and by pestilence in the place where you desire to go. And where you desire to go to live. And so that's the message. It's not what they wanted to hear, And now they're going to get mad. Verse 1 of chapter 43. When Jeremiah finished speaking to all the people, all these words of He who is their God, with which He who is their God had sent him to them, Azariah, the son of Hoshaiah, Yohanan, the son of Kareah, and all the insolent, that's braggish and rebellious men, said to Jeremiah, "You are telling a lie." So they said they'd accept whatever he said from God before, but now that it didn't match, they accuse him of being a liar. "He who is our God didn't send you to say, 'Do not go to Egypt to live there,' but Baruch, the son of Neriah, has set you against us to deliver us into the hand of the Chaldeans, that they may kill us or take us into exile in Babylon." Now, this is quite the twist. Baruch was Jeremiah's scribe, and he had been working with at least some of the Judean authorities on behalf of Jeremiah and on behalf of God. And apparently when the surrenders happened, when the captivity of the leadership happened, Baruch must have been given a pass by the Babylonians because he was working for Jeremiah. So now these guys are accusing Jeremiah of just being a mouthpiece for Baruch, who is a puppet of the Babylonians. So Yohanan, the son of Kareah, and all the commanders of the forces and all the people did not obey the voice of He who is to remain in the land of Judea. And so that's how we have to close it up today, that despite their promises that they would obey the voice of the Lord through Jeremiah, the moment it went against what they wanted, they immediately changed their attitude and treated Jeremiah with contempt and accused him of all sorts of unrighteous behavior. And unfortunately, that's often the way people respond to the message of God by preachers from the inspired word. And that's not a good thing at all.